Hour two of the game on Phil Steele Day. John, Tyler, Mitch all here with you. You're going to hear Phil Steele back-to-back segments here. A lot of college football talk and Jabroni of the Week at the end of the hour at 5:50. The game KMAN, if you have questions or comments. Might have a chance to field some phone calls later on in the hour. You missed the news that we opened up the show talking about today. Five-year extension for Mike Gundy, who's now going to make $4.2 million this year as the head coach of the Oklahoma State Cowboys. All right, Phil Steele, we had a chance to talk with him earlier today. There was so much information, we broke it up into two parts here. Part one, essentially K-State and the Big 12. Part two, next segment, starting at around 5:25, the national college football outlook from Phil Steele for the year. His magazine is not on newsstands yet. Exactly 2 weeks from today, it'll be on newsstands. You can order it on his website, and you can get the digital version right now as well. But it's no secret now, basically a college football Bible. If you're a college football fan, it is one of the highlights, certainly, of the summer, getting that magazine and getting a chance to read it. And really one of the highlights of the sports year for me on the show is getting a chance to talk some college football with Phil Steele at a time when we are incredibly starved for college football information.
You know, a lot of the times that I'm reading like the Big 12 blog or other experts or something like that, other preseason magazines, I kind of already formed the opinion that I have on each individual team, and I'll read those, and normally they won't do much to change what I think. I'll be convinced, I'm kind of stubborn, that I already know everything there is to know about those teams. Phil Steele is the exception to that rule. When he says something, he has stats to back it up, he's got figures to back it up, and he really can change your mind as far as what you think about certain things.
Very formulaic, as I said yesterday, in the way that he goes about doing things. And this is not just blowing smoke. I think most people realize this by now. This is not like some lame radio promo we're giving. I'm doing this out of the goodness of my heart because I believe it. It's a great resource and a great tool if you are a college football fan. But without further ado, here is Phil Steele, a guy who had just wrapped up getting the magazine off to print before Bob Stoops went and retired and changed everything. Usually he is better with some of the late movement there in college football because he waits longer to go to print than most of the college football preview magazines. So I can imagine for Phil Steele that that had to be almost somewhat frustrating that Bob Stoops made that move so close to when his magazine was set to come out.
Yeah. You know, normally it would if it was something that would affect my judgment, but in this case, it really didn't. I like the fact that Bob Stoops was there the entire spring. I like the fact that Lincoln Riley's the offense coordinator, Mike Stoops the defense coordinator, like the talent on hand. And, you know, Gil Brandt called me, I believe it was 3 years ago, prior to Oklahoma hiring Lincoln Riley, and said, this is one of the really upcoming coaches out there, Lincoln Riley. Keep your eye on him. Remember the conversation where, you know, Bob Stoops picks up the phone, it's Gil Brandt talking to him about Lincoln Riley, and he's interviewing Lincoln Riley for the OC position. I think he's done a great job. So I think Bob Stoops is not leaving at a tough time. They got him through the spring, and I think they'll be well prepared for the season. I did pick Oklahoma to win the Big 12 this year, and even without Bob Stoops, I'm still picking them to win the Big 12. So it wasn't a major catastrophe.
Well, it seems like to most people, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State would be the two favorites in the league, if not just Oklahoma solely, but I mean, the feeling here in Manhattan is that K-State has a very good chance to compete for a Big 12 championship. How likely, in your eyes, is that to play out?
You know, I'm definitely bullish on that. In fact, I think K-State's being rated lower than they should be coming into the season. Now, they've got some factors going against them. You keep in mind that last year, despite the fact they were 6-3 in the Big 12, they're actually outgained by 56 yards per game. Of course, they were plus 13 in turnovers, where I've got that turnovers equal turnaround in the magazine every year, which shows that those teams generally have a weaker record. But here's a couple factors I really like about K-State. This is a veteran team. You know, they had 135 starts last year by underclassmen. Now, that's unusual for Bill Snyder. Usually brings in a lot of JUCOs. So this is one of their more veteran teams. In fact, with the amount of returning starters they have back, they have 14 returning starters. The last time they had this many returning starters was 2012, and that year, they went 11-2. So here's a team that's got their usual JUCO infusion. They've got all those underclassmen back from last year. They have my number 40 rated quarterbacks. Receivers are rated high. The offensive line, I rate number 30. Defensive line, number 19. In fact, 6 of the 8 units are ranked in my top units, including my number one special teams in the country. And then you factor in the schedule. They do have to play Oklahoma State and Texas on the road, but the other two road games are very winnable. Kansas and Texas Tech. Bill Snyder knows how to pull upsets on the road, so if they bag one of those other two on the road, they get Oklahoma at home, they get West Virginia at home, I list Kansas State as a clear-cut contender in the Big 12, and I've seen some of the other publications that are out now. I think K-State's being underrated.
Phil, something that stood out to me when I first, you know, as soon as you announced that the magazine was available electronically, immediately I went ahead and jumped on that. And something that stood out to me, looking at the unit rankings across the Big 12, it's actually a little bit reversed from what I would have figured, with K-State's offense in the Big 12 being rated a little bit lower and the defense very, very good. Is that just a result of how good you think all of the offenses are going to be in the Big 12 this year?
Yeah, and you just look at the fire, and that's pretty much status quo for the Big 12, isn't it? But you look at some of the teams, you look at TCU, they've got Kenny Hill back, they've got that high-flying offense. Last year, the receivers dropped a lot of passes. They are loaded at receiver this year. I think they're going to be high-flying. You look at Oklahoma State, Mason Rudolph, James Washington, Justice Hill. That's a nice triplet combination there. Baker Mayfield back for Oklahoma. Say no more there. And then you've got Shane Buechele back, Chris Warner running back, and they've got some dangerous receivers at Texas. I think Baylor's going to be better than expected. So I just think the Big 12, even a team like Kansas, you go down to Kansas, you know, this is an offense with Beattie that's now in his second year, and he actually has my number 33 wide receiver unit in the country. And he's got a quarterback in Peyton Bender who lit it up in junior college. So I think it's going to be your typical Big 12 season where the offenses do quite well. And my magazine usually slants a little more to the defense, and I think that's why I have K-State rated higher than everyone else, because I do like their defense.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, Phil, and we're talking with Phil Steele here on the game. Defensively, I think the worry for me is that K-State is losing, you know, borderline elite guy at each level of the defense. Jordan Willis on the defensive line, Elijah Lee at linebacker, Dante Barnett at safety. What is it that really gives you the confidence K-State's defense will be able to pick things back up this year?
Well, I like teams that can get the pressure up front. And, yes, losing Jordan Willis is huge. But I like Will Geary at defensive tackle, Reggie Walker at defensive end. You know, they got Dyshon back as well. So I think it's a veteran defensive front. They add in their usual mix of JUCOs. You look at the linebackers, probably my biggest question mark on the defensive side is the linebacking core, because there's no returning starters there. But I like the talent they've got. And then you take a cornerback like DJ Reed. I think he'll break through. Elijah Walker comes in from junior college. He's my number 30 or number 4 rated JUCO coming out. So I think there's plenty of talent on the defensive side of the ball. And there's some guy on the sidelines, Bill Snyder, I think. Been around a few years. And every year this guy's defense produces at a higher level. It's better than if you added up all the individual players, the K-State defense produces better than that, and so I'm banking on that as well.
Phil, I think there's a pretty great deal of confidence that the Big 12 will have at least three or four very solid teams this year, but what is the upper end ceiling for them as far as the college football playoff? I think that Oklahoma gets talked about there a lot. Any chance that that we could see two or three teams in the top 10 by the end of the year?
Yeah, definitely a possibility there. I think I'm going to put Oklahoma and Oklahoma State right at the top. I think when you look at the talent they have and when you look at the schedules they have, as an example, Oklahoma State's road games in the Big 12 this year are Iowa State, West Virginia, Texas Tech, and Texas, all fall on the winnable category. I think you'll see Oklahoma State up there. But then I put the next group, and that is TCU, Kansas State, and Texas. And I think all three of those teams, one of them could break through. Texas, I thought, would break through last year. They greatly disappointed me. But Tom Herman is just a magician as the head coach as well. Not quite up to Bill Snyder standards, but I tell you what, this guy is 6-0 against ranked teams at the University of Houston, and that's quite a statement. And then TCU with Gary Patterson. You know, once again, I talk about defenses. Gary Patterson's defense is usually very good. Last year, they didn't seem so good, did they? But they only gave up 28 points per game, which isn't too bad for Big 12 play, and he's got a veteran defense coming back. So I think one of those three teams, whether it's a TCU, a Kansas State, or a Texas, breaks through, and yeah, I could see two or three teams in the top 10 at the end of the year.
Talking with Phil Steele here on the game, previewing the Big 12 and the national college football season. I know the common theme here is, all right, Oklahoma is going to be up there at the top. Are we glossing too much over the fact that they're losing D.D. Westbrook, Samaje Perine, and Joe Mixon?
Yeah, that's probably my biggest question mark when I was doing Oklahoma this year, because you look at them defensively. They started out last year extremely poor on the defensive side of the ball, got better as the season went on. They do return Jordan Thomas and Stephen Parker in the secondary. They've got Okoronkwo at the outside linebacker spot, so I think their defense is going to be much improved. But I'm concerned who is going to step up at running back, because I don't see a Mixon or a Perine there. Is it going to be a Rodney Anderson, Abdul Adams, or Sutton? That was quite a combo. I think both Mixon and Perine were NFL-caliber running backs, and I need to see someone emerge at that spot. Now, with Westbrook, remember his first year coming off JUCO, and then he got off to a slow start last year. He wasn't really D.D. Westbrook, but then turned into it. They've got some players that could, and maybe a Marquise Brown steps in and takes control like that, like Westbrook did last year. When you've got Baker Mayfield distributing the ball, I think a receiver will emerge. I'm more concerned about the two running backs they lost, and that's probably my biggest question mark on Oklahoma this year.
Phil, you mentioned that that Texas greatly disappointed you last year, and that does seem like something that has happened with you before, going back, you know, the last 5 to 7 years, as it has with so many people expecting that they're finally going to break through. Is this the year, this time around, that we finally see Texas back in national relevance?
Well, you think it could be. Now, keep in mind, generally a first-year head coach comes in, and he's got to learn the player's strengths and weaknesses. Players have to learn new schemes. But I like what I saw during the spring. Haven't got a chance to talk to Coach Herman yet for Texas. Usually do that over the summertime. Did that every year when he was at Houston. But I like the talent they have. Like I mentioned, the receiving corps, a lot of experience, a lot of depth. They've got size. They've got speed. Same thing with the secondary. Size, speed, sort of underachieved last year. Malik Jefferson, a linebacker, one of the better linebackers in the country. You look at these guys up front. They look good getting off the bus, that defensive line. So this is a team that's got a lot of talent. And Tom Herman's the guy that always gets the most out of the talent on hand. So I think it's a pretty good combination. My hesitance to putting Texas up there this year, one, they disappointed me last year, and two, it is a first-year head coach. And generally there's a little bit of a learning curve during the first year. But talent-wise, I think they've got the players that can compete with anybody in the Big 12.
Talking some Big 12 football here with Phil Steele. The rest of the conference, West Virginia, Baylor, Texas Tech, Iowa State, Kansas. Out of that group that's at the bottom of your projections in the Big 12, who do you think stands the best chance to really jump up and surprise somebody?
You know, and if you would have asked me that question last September when all the stuff was going on at Baylor and they had the interim head coach and players exiting the program, I would not have put Baylor up there. I would have thought, well, they're in for a long, dismal bunch of years coming up because of basically we're losing the recruiting class and all the players they lost. But Matt Rhule's the guy that steps in, and he's got confidence in this year's team. Now, it's going to be a little different. They're going to run the football more. They're going to bring the tight end into the offense, and that may even give them an advantage this year. Defensively, I like players they've got like K.J. Smith and Taylor Young in the defensive front seven. In fact, they have my number 27-rated D-line, number 33 defensive backs. 7 of their 8 units rank in the front of the magazine, including the special teams. So they're a team that's got some talent. They're not going to be as explosive, but they're going to be better defensively. And the schedule sets up where they could have a pretty good year. I don't think they're ready to contend with the K-States, Texas, and TCUs up front. But of the teams that I have in the bottom half of the Big 12, I think Baylor's your best bet.
All right, there's part one with Phil Steele. We will hit a break, come back, give you part two, where we take more of a view of the national scope of college football with the best in the business, Phil Steele. And speaking of that, his Heisman favorite, not the guy that won it last year. You're listening to The Game. Back here on The Game, Mitch has Jabroni of the Week coming up at the end of the hour. We turn to part two with Phil Steele, who talked Big 12 football with us last segment. Enjoyed most of his thoughts. Hope you got out of that what you wanted to about the K-State preview and why the K-State offensive units are so low. Essentially what we said yesterday, that relative to the Big 12, it just becomes difficult because there is a ton of offensive talent in the league, not nearly as much defensive talent. Thus, the defensive units get pretty high up there on the rankings. This is going to be predominantly the national scope of things in college football with Phil Steele, but did start by asking him if the addition of a Big 12 title game this year for the league increases the chances that the Big 12 will get a team in the college football playoff.
Yeah, and I think if you see a Big 12 team win the Big 12 title game with one loss, odds are they're going to get there. I like the overall talent of the conference. I think if Kansas shows improvement, like I think they will this year, I don't think Kansas is going to be bowl eligible or anything like that, but they actually have my number 54-rated defensive line, number 33 wide receivers in the country. And they gave some teams some scares last year. If they can go and take care of business in that non-conference, maybe bag a win or two, and you don't have a lightweight down at the bottom, I think that it gives the overall strength to the conference. So I give the Big 12 a decent shot of getting back to the playoffs this year. Yeah, that's what I've projected this year because you look at these two teams. I mean, when's the last time Alabama had a returning starter, a quarterback? It's been some time, but they've got a pretty good one back in Jalen Hurts. Overall experience-wise, they're even more experienced than they've been the last couple of seasons. And you look at their schedule. Which game do you pick Alabama to lose this year? I mean, their games on the road are against, Florida State's going to be tough out of the box, but they're going to be favored there. They'll be favored in every game. Toughest road games are Texas A&M, Mississippi State to get the big boys at home. I do think Alabama gets there, and they've got a guy on the sidelines that's pretty good as well in Nick Saban. Now, with Ohio State, remember last year they were the least experienced team in the entire country, and yet there they were in the playoffs, something that maybe there was a year ahead of their time. I love the hire of their new offensive coordinator, Kevin Wilson. He did a phenomenal job at Indiana. He's got tons of talent to work with here. And remember, JT Barrett had an outstanding season in 2014. He was a Heisman contender when he got injured. I think we'll see JT Barrett circa 2014 this year. They've got Mike Weber at running back, a veteran offensive line. And defensively, that defensive line is amazing. They're going to line up four defensive ends at times to rush the quarterback in. They go three deep with guys that have NFL caliber. Their linebacking core is solid. And then you look at their schedule, that game against Michigan, probably the toughest one all season because it's on the road the last game. But I think Ohio State will be favored in every game as well. And those two teams, that would make for a heck of a title game.
Phil Steele with us here on the game. I was like looking at the page about the biggest surprise teams in the country and pay close attention to that. Who do you have at the top of that list this year?
Well, last year, as you know, it was Washington, and Washington went from 7-6 to making the playoffs. This year, I'm going with Florida. They're not going to be in anybody's top 10 this year. And, you know, I had a hint prior to putting the magazine out. Since we put it out so late, June 1st, we sent the last page to the press. It seemed like Zaire was definitely going there, and now that he is going there, that's great news. But they still have Felipe Franks. They still have Luke Del Rio. Also need to get his decent quarterback play and maybe not lose their quarterback to injury 6 games into the season. But the rest of Florida is loaded. They've got the best running back and receiving core they've had in a long time. They've got a veteran offensive line. Defensively, they're always great. And remember last year, injuries hurt the defense, but those injuries will help them this year because it puts some guys on the field, like a Zuniga at the defensive end spot, a C.C. Jefferson. They got more action than they normally would, so they're more veteran than you would think. And when you look at their schedule, remember they had that home game taken away from them last year against LSU? Well, now they get LSU at home. So they're only road games, true road games they have this year. At Kentucky, at Missouri, at South Carolina. All winnable. They get Georgia at a neutral site. Michigan, they get at a neutral site, but they get it the first game of the season. And Michigan's number 128 experience-wise. Florida's a much more experienced team. I think when I look at the Gators, I can see them potentially even running the table this year, and they're a threat to make not only get back to the SEC title game, but make the playoffs, and let's face it, an SEC champ would do great in the playoffs.
Phil, before we let you go, talking about the Heisman Trophy here, we do have a returning Heisman winner coming back in Lamar Jackson, but it seems like with all the names coming back, this is one of the more competitive Heisman years that we've had in a little while, just with a lot of experienced names coming back. Do you feel like it is Jackson's to lose?
Actually, I went with Sam Darnold in the magazine this year to get there. And, you know, here's the reason why. And one of the reasons, remember last year we had all those five Heisman Trophy favorites coming in, all had great years the previous year. You're like, wow, they all have the potential to get there. And then what happens is you're not only competing against all the other players that are battling for the Heisman, you're competing against your stats from last year. And if you don't beat them and beat them by a decent margin, everybody's like, oh, he didn't have a great year. And the stats you put up last year to make you a Heisman favorite coming into the year were fantastic. I don't know if Lamar Jackson can repeat those stats. Remember his last 3 games last year, he was nowhere near the Lamar Jackson that won the Heisman Trophy. So I went with Sam Darnold. And you know, this summer I've been watching a lot of replays from last year's games, got him DVR'd. Sam Darnold makes some incredible throws under pressure. I mean, it looks like he's about to go down, gets up, and throws the ball right on the money. He's accurate, he's got a strong arm, great supporting cast. USC probably going to be favored in almost every one of their games this year. So I went with Sam Darnold to win the Heisman.
Well, Phil, greatly appreciate the time, as always, joining us this year. Love talking football with you. Love the magazine. We'll be looking for it, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, sounds great. Always enjoy doing the show with you guys.
All right, there is Phil Steele with us here on the game. Really enjoy that conversation each and every year. When we come back, we'll react a little bit to it. Plus, if you didn't notice where I screwed up in bringing you this interview, right in front of Jabroni of the Week, I feel like I might be in a bit of trouble. We also have breaking news regarding the Major League Baseball draft and Kansas State Wildcat being picked. We'll give you that on the other side here on The Game. Jabroni of the Week, 10 minutes away. Did you catch where I screwed up there in editing together the second part of that interview?
No, I didn't.
I made a mistake and cut out the question. The question leading up to him talking about Alabama and Ohio State.
It went from Phil Steele answer directly to the next Phil Steele answer.
Yeah, that's my bad. My bad, everybody. The question was, is it Alabama and Ohio State up at the top, just like it seems to be every year?
That was my question.
Like Cavs, Warriors. Yes, it was.
I'm less okay with it now. You cut my question.
That's my fault. My fault. I'm sure that was confusing for some. I hope that clears some of it up. I can clear this up as well. Awesome news to see this. Jordan Floyd, K-State reliever, drafted in the 10th round, picked number 300 overall by the Kansas City Royals.
Just bulking up that bullpen.
So Floyd, who was a draft pick coming out of high school, out of Shawnee Heights High School in Topeka, now drafted again and in the 10th round. Just for a point of reference, last year K-State had a reliever taken in the 10th round. That was Lucas Beninati, who's now an A-ball in the Reds organization. A couple years ago, Nate Greep was taken in the 8th round, so this is close to around there, and Greep was K-State's ace, really a great Friday night guy, and the last pretty solid Friday night guy K-State has had. So that's pretty good company, is the point I'm trying to make here for Jordan Floyd being selected that high. Jordan Floyd is a very fun guy to be around, so from that standpoint, I mean, I am thrilled for him that not only gets taken by the hometown team and the Royals, but taken that early. And you said money-wise, he may be doing all right here with the slotted signing bonus.
Not bad. $133,700 is what MLB lists as the pick value there.
Perfect example of why a lot of these prospects should take a long, hard look of going through college. Because he was taken. You mind looking up his bio for me real quick? He was not a very high selection at all coming out of high school, but he was taken in the draft. The signing bonus money there would not have been nearly as much, and I think he's just a guy that benefited from being able to mature through college and just develop as a baseball player, and I think it would have been really tough for him going straight from high school at that point into the minor leagues.
That would have been the 25th round of the 2013 draft. He was the number 764 overall pick by the New York Yankees.
Okay, there you go. So gets to mature, develop here in college, now a 10th round pick, and $133,000 potentially coming his way for being taken by the Kansas City Royals. So good example there of, you know, I realize every case is different with a high school kid, whether or not they're going to go to college or go to the draft. The 25th round, that's getting murky as far as which way you would go. I think he made the right decision, and with a lot of kids, it is the right way to go, as much as it could hurt to be patient enough when you have the professional outlet staring you in the face. I can understand why it's tough.
He just barely made it into day two because, as of now, the draft is done for today. Round 10, that was the end of it. 11 through 40 is all day tomorrow.
Okay. Is it okay that we broke up this segment to give this MLB draft news, Mitch? Was that all right this time? Better than the first time?
That was fine. Okay. I am not booked in this segment.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're fine.
This is not your segment. All right. Fair enough. Next segment is, though, when we get to Jabroni of the Week. Just a reaction to what Phil Steele had to say. As usual, pretty positive about K-State. Did agree with the notion that the Cats have a good chance to compete for a Big 12 title. Now, he did say that his computer numbers, his power numbers, when he runs all that, came out with Texas, TCU, and K-State neck and neck. So he went ahead and put them all tied for third. And when we asked about the offensive unit rankings being pretty low, basically just said relative to the rest of the conference, there's a lot of offensive talent. So that's the explanation there. I don't think it's really surprising at all from him. And if you do, look, I understand. If you see K-State's running backs at eighth or whatever, and that makes you angry, the wide receivers at ninth, I can understand how that would tick you off a little bit. But I don't think, especially when you listen to Phil Steele, this is a guy, I just want to point, this is not a guy that's got a vendetta. He's not trying to be vindictive to K-State or anything like this. He's not out to get to the Wildcats. He perfectly understands Bill Snyder and what K-State is usually able to do. But he also has a formula, and what have we learned about K-State through the years? You can try and go through on paper and see what it looks like. You can try and go through the formula, see what it looks like. K-State almost always outperforms, though. So he's not going to make a bunch of huge exceptions year after year with the way he in general does the magazine. If you have a formula that works, big picture, and you're Phil Steele, and these numbers that you plug in generally turn out good results, and you're typically the best magazine when it comes to projections, you're not going to go individually and start case by case. You know, it's a slippery slope if you go case by case and start adjusting those a whole bunch. Just saying, well, I would have K-State's running backs 8th in the Big 12, but I know Bill Snyder's great. I'm going to go ahead and bump him up to like 5. You know, that's a slippery slope if you start doing stuff like that. There's other great coaches in the country. So in defense of Phil Steele, that's the point that I would make there. Much like I always say about Bill Snyder's program. You know, we hear some of the whispers of things that maybe some don't like. There's some things that are tougher on the players than others, but it's like you have this whole big system that has worked so well. Why would you go tinkering with it and changing it if the end result is very good? I think it's the same type of idea here with Phil Steele. And now I've successfully compared Phil Steele to Bill Snyder, which if you were already upset about Phil Steele, you're probably 10 times as upset right now.
Well, and you know, when he compares or when he says K-State tied for 3rd in the Big 12, he's not specifying a conference record there. We don't know if Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are in there at 8-1 and 7-2, and then you've got the T3 teams at 6-3. If you go 6-3 in the Big 12 this year, you're probably looking at a 9-3 regular season, and that is an improvement on last year, not to mention it is the over in terms of Vegas's over-under for wins for you. So if you look at it in that regard, I can understand where you would frame it like this and say that that there are 4 teams that are projected to be as good or better than K-State in the Big 12. And, yeah, when you look at it like that, it's kind of pessimistic. But I see where he's coming from, and I do agree that there is a lot of offensive talent in the league this year. So I'm gonna give him a lot of benefit of the doubt.
Well, and if it makes you feel any better too, his straight-up power rankings, which are just rankings of how good he thinks each team is in terms of what they have as a team – it takes schedule out of the equation, rest of the league, anything like that. It's basically just who he thinks if you line him up on a field. In a vacuum, as I love to say. It's
in a 64-team tournament.
Perfect use for that. In a vacuum, what each team is. He has K-State 19th. So he thinks they're the 19th best combination of talent and coaching in the country. The schedule then starts to factor into it when he is projecting finishes in the conference. So all in all, I think it's pretty fair, really, where he has K-State. Texas, were you satisfied with his description about Texas? Why he's got the horns tied for 3rd?
I will say that I have more confidence.
That's a no, by the way.
Not necessarily. I have more confidence in Tom Herman getting it done than I did with Charlie Strong and that I have with Texas in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. I just don't know if I see it year one with them. But I would be very surprised if they disappointed to the same regard that they did last year, say losing to Kansas and everything like that. I do think they'll be better. I don't know if I would say tied for 3rd.
Yeah, it was basically what you would expect. Like they look great. He used the phrase they look great looking off the coming off the bus.
Right.
They've got talent on defense.
But they always do.
The defensive line. Tom Herman's 6-0 against ranked teams as a head coach in his time at Houston. I was a bit surprised when asking him about the rest of the league outside of the top 5 that we'd been talking about there, who was most likely to jump up into that top group. Not West Virginia, but Baylor has some faith in Matt Rhule bringing in a different style to Baylor and feels pretty good about, in general, their talent level still in that program, even considering everything that's happened. And then a few mentions for the Kansas Jayhawks. Likes the wide receivers in the D-line of the Jayhawks.
And they are an improved team.
I'm sure they will be. Yeah, hey. Right now, we didn't talk about this yesterday. I had this written down. They're back up in the top 20 of those recruiting rankings for 2018.
Yeah, didn't they get a 5-star guy or something like
well,
that?
Well, one of their kids that have been committed for a while got bumped from 4 to 5 stars.
Oh,
but
I see.
They had a couple commitments over the weekend.
You know, K-State fans might be complaining about where Phil Steele has him, but I think that West Virginia is the team with the biggest gripe against Phil Steele just in relation to where we think things are going to fall with the media preseason poll here in about a month or so.
Yeah, well, you know what? He's not buying into Will Grier being a total savior for that program, which thank you for that, Phil Steele. Thank you very much. I, for one, appreciate it.
I think Will Grier is fine. I think their defense is the bigger issue.
Did lose a lot. They absolutely did. If you missed any of the interview, newsradiokman.com, the On Demand tab, part 1 and part 2 of Phil Steele, Jabroni of the Week, when we come back.
Jabroni's hit the jackpot.
That Jabroni you have sitting in your studio.
Ow.
Is this Jabroni's name?
Jabroni of the week.
John, I'm sorry to tell you, but your recommendation will not be Jabroni of the week.
Oh, give me this week. A break. It was wonderful.
It won't be a
it
dishonorable
was really,
mention.
Really good.
It won't be a dishonorable mention either. Here's the deal. I think we got worked.
What?
I think we got worked. I think it was planned.
Oh,
no.
You want to go ahead and explain what it was, John?
In this age of fake news, you have got to treasure the real stuff, and that's real. Okay, so it was the race at a Braves game where their gimmick is you have to run around the outfield fence, and they give the random fan that comes in to run it. I don't know what the specific distance is supposed to be of the head start, but a giant head start. And then this guy in a Mr. Freeze costume, who is apparently like a world-class sprinter, just takes off after him and sees if he can make up the distance there. So the guy is cruising along, actually in decent shape. Like, he's doing a decent enough job. But he comes down the home stretch, and he hears the crowd start to go nuts. He starts waving his arms to pump him up, not realizing that the Freeze guy is like a step behind him, blast by him. And then as he's still trying to pump up the crowd, he trips, stumbles, falls over himself as he loses. So the crowd was actually cheering because the other guy had caught up to him. He thought they were cheering because he was about to win. Stopped to pump up the crowd, trip, fell, lost.
It's hard to put a guy in Jabroni of the Week when you have absolutely no idea who he is. Just a little 15 minutes of infamous fame.
Your rules for Jabroni of the Week just always get me.
Here's a few things that I think that are actually a little better than that. I'm gonna
go. Wasn't even in dishonorable mention?
No, I'm going to go with A-Rod here. A-Rod this week, it's now public knowledge, he's being extorted by an ex-girlfriend. She's blackmailing him, saying that he was sending her text messages while he's dating Jennifer Lopez. And she's trying to blackmail him out of $600,000. And apparently she's been trying forever to get money out of him and just been denying it until she made it public knowledge that he's been cheating on Jennifer Lopez.
So she got the money?
Not that I know of yet.
Oh, okay.
But he is definitely being worked by an ex-girlfriend. She will probably get at least something out of it. Next, I'm going to go with the Atlanta Falcons. They're still not being let off the hook about what happened in Super Bowl 51, losing, or actually, they did lose, yes, but they gave up a 28-3 lead in the second half. Well, a few days ago, the New England Patriots unveiled what their Super Bowl rings will look like, and it was confirmed there will be 283 diamonds in each ring to symbolize the 28-3
comeback. Classic troll move. Classic troll move. Wait, so who's the Jabroni?
The Atlanta Falcons.
Got to beat them while they're down.
That's exactly right.
Dead horse.
Specking.
Oh, my guy can't get in there.
Speaking of beating while they're down, my last dishonorable mention, I'll go with Nashville's P.K. Subban. He plays
Subban, isn't it?
Is it Subban?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I think it's P.K. Subban.
But he plays for the Nashville Predators, and during game five of the Stanley Cup Finals, it was already 6-0. I mean, the game was already over, but Sidney Crosby had knocked P.K. to the ground with a check on the glass, and he fell to the ice. And while he was down, I mean, they were really getting tangled up. They had been at each other all game. Well, while PK was down on the ground, Sidney Crosby had top position, and he continued to completely pound PK's head into the ice multiple times, punching him. And when he got up, PK tried punching back, didn't work out. Officials broke it up and sent both of them to the penalty box. And I've just never seen somebody own like that for a long amount of time without the officials breaking it up at any point. I mean, Sidney Crosby had this dude's number all game, got the best of PK, and then got got the knockout punch for slamming his head into the ice.
It's still not
times.
As good as John's suggestion.
Oh, if you've seen the video, I mean, that is textbook material for a Jabroni. That is exactly what a Jabroni is.
I guess it is his segment, so he gets to decide.
All right.
And far be it from me.
And then finally, my Jabroni of the Week, I'm going back to the Stanley Cup playoffs because in Game 6, there was a very controversial moment in that game. It's 0-0. We're a minute into the second period. I was watching this, and Colton Sissons knocked in the not exactly off a rebound, but a shot went between the goalkeeper's legs for Pittsburgh, and the Nashville player, Colton Sissons, knocked it in for a goal. Well, right before that happened, there was a whistle. The official thought that the goalkeeper for Pittsburgh froze the puck. And what that means is after a save, the goalie just holds on to it to force a faceoff. Well, it actually ended up just sliding through the legs of the goalkeeper, and Colton Sissons scored, but it did not count because the official blew his whistle. No, they couldn't review it because of the judgment of the official.
Yeah, it's like inadvertent whistle.
And in my opinion, the Predators at that point, it's on home ice. They're playing for their championship lives. They've never been here before. And with one blow the whistle, you can almost argue that decided the Stanley Cup Finals.
So who's the jabroni then?
It's the officials.
Okay.
For that very bad error.
All right.
Which they should have known better anyway.
I mean, that was pretty bad. You know what it reminded me of was, is it the UTEP game in 2014?
Oh, goodness. Blocked punt gate?
Yeah, inadvertent whistle after the blocked punt.
I still remember the Deadspin headline from that. Officials in UTEP K-State botch blocked punt, spend 12 minutes not fixing.
Yeah, that's right. There was like a crazy long review after that. That was not great. If there was a Jabroni of the Week back then, they would have been targets for that, certainly. Thanks to Phil Steele for joining us today. Likely no show tomorrow, Royals day game. They start at 2:45 with the Giants, so in all likelihood it'll be Thursday by the time that we talk to you once again. For Tyler Dreiling and Mitch Fortner, I'm John Kurtz. Thanks for listening to The Game.